Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Well, more revelations in the first half about my grandma's old life and gay movement founder, pioneer Harry Hay, because she's up in his book and we did the research. Jake Paul is going to jump on as well. We'll do like tweets and we'll do all that right after this.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. And welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast, the most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight. This is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy. It's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us. We don't do interviews. We do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill. We drink, we play games, we have the song of the week, we have the creative curse word of the week, as long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm going to go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, William Shatner and Jake Paul. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, with their divorce looming, he's offering himself up to Giselle or Tom Brady. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We got a mandate to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. I love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
White people are dogs.
Well, we got Jake Paul on the show today. We got Bill Shatner. A lot of range in those two guests, but excited to talk to both of them about it. I was referencing a clip that Terry Crews did on Take a Knee some years ago when he was talking about making the pie deeper or bake your own pie or whatever it is versus the equity that Kamala Harris was talking about recently, which is a fucking road to nowhere. Just the general concept of like, well, not everyone starts in the same place. No shit, bitch. Check your globe. This is how it works.
Big world out there.
The point of a society is starting everyone in the same place is a mathematical impossibility. It cannot happen. And if in order to make it happen, you'd need some real totalitarian rule kicking in to fix that one.
It's really philanthropic rich people.
All we can do as a society is create a society. You know, so many societies.
That's the trouble society
in our world. There's so much corruption and graft, and everyone's on the take. And you can't go to certain societies if you're not from a certain family. You know, in Russia, many parts of Central America and South America, it's not worth trying to get started. You'll never get there. All you can do as a society is go. No one's starting in the same place, but everyone has the same opportunity to get to the same place. That's all you can do as a society. That's the challenge. And you keep refining it and you keep making laws and things that says, all right, this group has suffered. Let's see if we can flatten out the playing field a little. But that's about it. The next part where everyone needs to start in the same place and presumably end in the same place. By the way, I know many people that are more than happy to work evenings, holidays, and weekends, and I know many people who do not. Why should those people who choose not to do this end up in the same place as Mark Garagos, who comes in here and sits on his phone in the parking lot of with his Range Rover running, and then runs in here, barks out a few things, and then runs back and gets on the phone? Why shouldn't that guy's extra work be factored in? This is Terry Crews from 2015.
Listen, you can steal from me, I'll be fine. The question is, what does that do to you? That's right. The question. Terry Crews is going to be great. But if you steal from me, if you go and bust in my house, take my TVs, blah, 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 I'll go get some more TVs.
Right.
But what does that do to you? What are you now?
You're a thief is what you are.
You are a thief. And you live like a thief. And you act like a thief. And all of a sudden, everybody is your problem. You are now a professional victim because you see no way you can get anything in your life other than taking it. And I had some friends that I had to get rid of. They had a person, they had a mindset of this, you know, man, you know, you got to get yours because everybody's trying to get. It's like, wait. No. You can create. First of all, you are a creator. That's what we do. We create things. And, you know, anytime you think of this world like a pie, it's funny because everybody's like, man, you got to get your piece of the pie. We finally got a piece. You know, the songs, everybody's singing it and everybody's scrambling because there ain't going to be nothing left. But that's not true. The world is like a kitchen. You got flour. You got fruit. You got whatever. Make a pie. You can make pie. Wait, there's not one left.
Well, that dude's a racist, clearly.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. Summed it up nicely. Make your own fucking pie.
And last year, Dave Ramsey from The Ramsey Show, the financial advisor, he tweeted Terry this exact quote. And then Terry responded with a fire emoji. So still all about it.
Yeah.
Gina, I want to go.
Yeah, it says, everybody says they're trying to get their piece of the pie. They don't realize that the world is a kitchen. You can make your own pie. And that is attributed to Terry Crews.
Right. Now, politicians get elected convincing you can't make your own pie, so you need some of Terry Crews's pie. That's the insidious part.
And, you know, it's so funny because when I was walking this morning, I was listening to this podcast about psychology, and it was about learned helplessness how, you know, in a family or whatever, you either are told over and over again or there are things happen that you're like, I don't know, I give up. Somebody just help me because I don't know. But when I was like, oh, my God, that's what we're talking about, like on the show. Like, it's societal learned helplessness.
Yes.
And it's so unfair to the person that you're convincing is helpless.
You're hobbling them. Look no further than Brad Williams. His dad said, hey, life's going to be tough. I'm not going to build you a step stool. You want to get the cereal out of the upper cabinet? That's where it is. Figure it out, dude. You're not a victim. Adapt. Overcome. And that's why Brad's Brad. All right. So in other news, Chris did his due diligence on the Harry Hay book.
Oh, did he read the whole thing cover to cover?
I read a lot of it. Yeah.
He went online. He did the book, the Kindle
the
version
e-book,
of
yeah.
it, and
good,
then
good.
Put grandma's name in there.
Wow.
And it was a little discovery because my grandfather, Lacy, spelled Lacey, so they thought there was a Lacey Gorog in there, but it's Laci, which is Lacy. So thought maybe in a chick, but that's him.
Right.
And then grandma had a Helen Johnson versus a Gorog back then, so they had to look it up. Do a little sleuth work.
More torrid and tawdry details.
Yes, and also if you're watching on YouTube, we just put up a picture of Helen that was in the book.
Wow.
Oh. So there she is.
Read the picture section. Yeah.
So I've got a few excerpts. This one is just a little slice of life.
Now, this all must be from the 40s, I'm guessing. She met Grandpa. She was dating him in the later 40s.
Yeah.
So they were somewhere in the 40s.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, so here we go.
Distinguished European musicians who happened to be leftists were among those who gave concerts at the building when films were not being shown. Visitors covered the social spectrum, and one of the more glamorous was Richard Bulig, a renowned Viennese pianist who was a teacher to John Cage. Bulig invited the young people from Harold Way to his own house in Los Feliz. Bulig's big distinction was that he had an affair with Isadora Duncan, recalled Helen Johnson.
Oh, gossip.
He was gay.
Spilling it.
But I guess she was just too good or too famous to pass up.
Oh, my.
He had a wonderful large house with a front room that was completely unfurnished except for his grand piano. I remember his playing, and Harry and I would dance together. That was something. Harry was a very good ballroom dancer. And with Bulig playing, it was glorious.
Damn.
Yeah, grandma in her younger years.
Cut a rug or...
Yeah. A lot of artists and bohemians and actors and musicians. She loved that shit. The other, I don't know if you guys had this, but it'll come up as Dawson reads on. The unnecessary or undue glorification of their friends.
Mm.
Did you guys have that?
How so?
It'd be a lot of like, Trudy Mandel's an artist, mm-hmm. okay? And she makes art, and she's a wonderful artist. But it's like, Trudy Mandel sold some slab pots, you know, at a yard sale. You know what I mean? Like, it's like there was no context to anything. Yeah. Everyone was just a wonderful and the best, you know. And Jules is understudy position of Man in La Mancha in the Conejo Junior College. Like, but if you thought about a contemporary who said, "Yeah, I'm an actor. Yeah. How's it going?
Oh, what have you been in?
I'm understudying the Man in La Mancha at Conejo JC."
So again, where are you acting?
Yeah, it's like
between gigs.
Yeah. You would look at that person as a loser actor.
Yeah, like a bless your heart.
Right. And then there was these kind of random sort of Anita says, or there's a lot of this sort of building up of people that weren't particularly accomplished, let's say. Like, you know, look, my kids grew up suckling at the bosom of Jimmy Kimmel and Mark Garagos and Dr. Drew. Those are some of the people that were around them. And you couldn't go, all right, that person has actually done something in their life. These were people that were needlessly built up.
Inflated.
I think it was to put a little shine on their star.
Yes.
Like, this is a friend of mine. Emery Kenrick is a friend of mine. You know, like that. As I said to my grandmother, famously, a million years ago, God knows how we got into clitoris versus clitoris.
Oh, boy.
But
you're making my grandma blush.
But my grandmother, I said, clitoris, and she said, it's pronounced clitoris.
It's a hard stand.
And I said, Dr. Drew says clitoris, and she's like, Emery Kenrick's a doctor, and he says clitoris. And I was like, all right.
I don't know why
your doctor's better than my doctor. Yeah. And then we went, I'll never forget it. We said, you know what? We're going to settle this argument. And we
walked, me jumping out the window.
We marched into my grandfather's office, still intact, you know, after he'd passed, found his oversized dictionary, looked it up with large print, and it said, pronounce it either way.
Oh.
So not satisfied. We both did a victory lap around the 1,100 square foot shack she lived in. All right, sorry, more.
And before you go on, I love that she had to sneak in a ton of gossip and hearsay. Like, well, he was gay, but he must have been great, but that's not my never mind.
Well, there's a lot of gay who married and had kids.
Sure,
and
back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of this book does feature stories about Harry's hookups with both men and women.
Yeah.
And here's Helen describing one of the young men that he was with.
Harry took up another steamy and ultimately strained romance with Walter Keller, a young man he met that autumn. Keller was of Russian Jewish heritage, 17 years old, and resembled a young fawn.
What?
He looked like Bambi.
You want to be your grandmother? Jesus Christ, how about you bake some Toll House cookies, bitch? We'll call it a life.
They met at one of Don Sample's parties in...
By the way, now... No wonder she was not in the stands of any peewee football games I was playing and cheering me on after working the concession stand and volunteering there. You expect this woman to be in the stands of a Pop Warner football game?
Picking up elaborate similes of
That's right.
They met at one of Don Sample's parties in Homo Hollow, a house Harry's old friend rented on Lower Laurel Canyon Road. It had been painted by a Hollywood set designer to look like a crumbling ruin, and was a well-known party spot.
Homo Hollow.
Mm-hmm. Don had cultivated a salon of all sorts of people, from the adventurous to the pretentious, recalled Helen Johnson. Parties would start there Friday night and end sometime Monday or Tuesday, whenever people had to crawl off to work. That house had great suspended ceiling beams, and I remember Don walking barefoot across them every time he got drunk.
It's a builder.
I don't like the idea that she's staring up at the ceiling beams for a 3-day weekend. Because I feel
what
like
activity could she possibly be engaged in?
Not playing Connect Four. She's drinking bathtub gin and getting railed. Man, Grandma could party with the Bohemians
all weekend. No wonder.
Then she, you know, she ends up working at the VA, living in North Hollywood, and having me show up wanting to work on Tonka trucks and stuff. And she's like, "Well, screw this. Yeah, I'm an artist." Yeah. Sorry, Dawson.
Okay. Yeah. So the next episode. Well, I should mention Harry Hay was married to a woman. Mm-hmm.
Father of the modern gay movement. Sorry.
Yes. We find out that the woman, Anita, was introduced to Harry by Helen.
Wow.
Helen Johnson, Harry's friend from the film and photo league, was Anita's best friend in the class of 1931 at Beverly Hills High School. Anita was gifted with fine intelligence, humor, and style. Helen said, though because of her appearance she lacked self... Helen said, though, because of her appearance, she lacked self-confidence.
Yeah, so set the porker up with the gay guy.
That's right.
It's easy.
Other of Anita's friends shared that impression. Anita really was attractive and had a lot of style, Helen recalled. But she was dark. And as my mother would have said, foreign-looking.
Oh, ethnic.
Which meant Jewish-looking.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Semitic.
In the 30s, if you weren't 5'2" with eyes of blue, you didn't feel so pretty. But to Harry, Anita's party membership outshone all else. She had already gone through the classes I was involved in and had read the right literature and knew all the right people. It seemed like the start of a beautiful relationship, free of the deadlocks he had faced before. He contrived to meet her at his birthday party that April. Leroy Robbins' wife, Florence, threw a dinner, and Harry asked Helen to invite her tall girlfriend. That night, Harry remembered, "We discovered we liked each other." They found they thought alike and shared a sense of humor and an interest in the arts. Harry recalled that at political meetings, when slogans were being composed for protest signs, he would start a slightly wicked, sophisticated one, and Anita invariably finished it. Harry once said, with awkward sincerity, "If she had been a boy, we would still probably be together."
Yeah.
During the course of public protests,
I like the kind of Jerry Maguire. You complete me. Mm. You finish my protest.
Yeah. Your call and response.
Mm-hmm.
They fell in love.
Mm. And so they were married.
Oh, nice. Good for them.
But then,
yeah. So they were married, but. Because Harry was gay, there was a lot of trouble in the relationship.
What?
Yeah, there are a lot of men still involved in his life, so there's trouble in paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Anita did her best to keep things in check. Once, when they and the Gorogs were playing charades, Harry acted out something, and his partner couldn't get it. When the game was over and the term was revealed, they disagreed about the definition, and, insisting he was right, Harry left angrily.
Yeah, I told you the guy's a delight.
Anita brought him over early the next morning and made him apologize.
Yeah, well, wait till noon. By the way, if you guys have been drinking and playing charades all night,
early the next morning.
Knock, 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 6:45. Sorry.
Beat it.
Okay, it's fine.
Helen remembered. That was just Harry. It didn't affect our friendship. It didn't affect our friendship. Later, when our daughter ran away and we stayed up all night and we stayed up all night worrying. It was Harry and Anita who held our hands.
Damn. Wait, do you know that story?
That sounds vaguely something. I'm assuming everyone ran away at some point. There's two themes. You either run away or you wait 3 years and get kicked out. That was the sort of the family theme. So some people didn't feel like, they quit before they get fired.
Understood.
I think that was the thought process.
Wow.
Yeah, the great Harry Hay and Grandma and Beverly Hills and Hollywood.
Los Feliz.
My
Homo Hollow.
My grandmother grew up in a sort of affluently in Beverly Hills, but her dad, I hope everyone's sitting down, who she hated, was not a doctor or lawyer. He was a cement contractor who liked fishing and going on hunting trips and stuff. He, because of Los Angeles being the way it was in the 20s, was able just to get a bunch of work paving Los Angeles and Hollywood.
Yeah, changing orange groves to streets.
Made enough money to live in Beverly Hills, because Beverly Hills wasn't really Beverly Hills like it is now. And they tried to keep up this sort of facade of a sophisticated life living in Beverly Hills, but he was really just a blue-collar sort of, you know, bumpkin who wanted to hang out with his crew and go hunting and stuff like that.
Well, at least it explains the genesis of your grandmother's wanting to be something she's not.
Right.
Fit in.
So she decided she would be with the bohemians and the artists and get away from this guy who wanted to go hunting and fishing and drive a truck and everything. So she hated her brother. And she hated her, well, she hated her brother, her dad, and her mom. I guess that about covered it.
Trifecta.
And then the Depression hit, and everyone lost everything, and now everyone was out. And from that day forth, until young Adam Carolla hammered a check about 20 years ago, it was just poverty from that point
forward. Did they lose their house in Beverly Hills?
Yeah, and it was a big thing because they had like a servant and stuff back when those houses had
servants' quarters.
Quarters off the kitchen, and you know, they kept up appearances.
Wow.
And then they lost it all, and then the brother committed suicide, then it all started to come unraveled after that.
Wow.
Yeah. I wish he could have kept it going or still owned the house or something over there somewhere in Beverly Hills.
Can you only imagine?
On, by the way, on Cannon Drive, except for my grandmother would always correct me and tell me it was Canyon.
Canyon, because it has
the squiggle over the end. And then I would go, I got it. But everyone says Cannon. So I'm just saying, well, you'd be incorrect.
Oh, I'm
so,
sure she called it Los Feliz.
There was a battle. Oh, of course.
God.
Sepulveda.
Yeah.
All right. We have some liked tweets, according to Max Apat over there, that we can get into.
Here's the tweets he liked. He didn't reply because he cannot type. Here's the tweets he liked. Sent in by you to piss him off all day and all night. Here's the tweets he liked.
All right, so this video's been going around for a while, but there's some Dutch builders that built a tunnel under a highway in 48 hours, and there's a time-lapsed video that everybody was watching on Twitter. Millions and millions of views. In less than 48 hours, road workers recently demolished a roadway that was too narrow, installed a tunnel in its place, and rebuilt the new highway to be one lane wider. All of this through dead of night darkness and the occasional rainstorm.
This is in the Netherlands?
48 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one weekend. And then the tunnel is prefabbed and preformed, and they just slide it into place and then bring the road. I'm just saying.
It can be done.
Somebody tweeted me too, like, you know, California's last in roads, number one in gas prices and last in roads. We have the worst roads. And then I think about this stretch next to this building, the side of the freeway that I've been taking pictures of. They have been working on this side of freeway. I keep asking Chris, is there a date by when I first started sending you pictures of it? There is an over under 7.5 years of them. The other day, they were spraying wood chips on it, so they're getting to the end. They plant trees, then the weeds take it over, then they pull the weeds, then the weeds grow again, then they pull the weeds again, then the sprinklers sprinkle the sidewalk. Then at some point, they were spraying wood chips on the side of the freeway the other day. The thing that was funny is somebody had dumped a mattress on the side, and they sprayed it with wood.
They went over the mattress.
The mattress has the wood chips on it. As opposed to what we're just talking to the Dutch tunnel. That was 2 days. 2 days to add a lane, build a tunnel, install a tunnel, repave the road. Wow. This is 7 years to take
a mattress
and spray it with wood chips.
What a sad metaphor.
I would assume, and you can look into this, Chris, I would assume It's like I was talking on CarCast about, and we've talked about it before, like we have talking about going to Laguna Seca from here for a race in about a week and a half and towing the vehicle. Mm. And Matt, I have a Ford Dually diesel pickup truck that's been a little temperamental and had some issues. And I said, I don't know, are we comfortable taking that truck that's had some issues over the grapevine? And then I said, Matt, you got the new all-electric Ford Lightning. How's that do for towing? And the answer is it's got about a 300-mile range, but if you're towing, it's probably more like 165, 170, which is means Laguna Seca is out of range. Right. And then the next question is, what's the infrastructure? Like, if we can go to Buellton, have some split pea That's soup right. and Anderson's. Put a charge back on the car, on the truck, then we can do it. And the answer, as tested from Edmunds, is there's no infrastructure. Tesla has an infrastructure because they're Tesla, and Elon's like, I'm going to work on the infrastructure. California doesn't have any infrastructure. So we want everyone to get an electric car, which is fine, but how is one getting out of town in said vehicle Ooh, minus the infrastructure?
That's their plot to keep you here.
That's right.
Just enough to get you the outskirts.
I would look, you don't have to look now, but is that Dutch tunnel video? It's from 2016. Is that a private company is the question? Because I remember during the 94 earthquake, I brought it up before, patch of the 10 freeway collapsed and fucked up the whole city even worse than it is. And they just basically contracted to some private contractor and said, and I'll screw it up, but it's basically, if you can do this, get this back and running in under 5 weeks, you'll get, you know, $2 million or $5 million, $10 million. But for every day under 5 weeks, we'll put another $100,000 in your pocket. Guess who got that shit done in like 11 days? That's how humans work. That's how it works. And that's why I don't want the government getting involved, because the side of this freeway is a bunch of guys with no incentive.
Well, and to take that point, the first thing I think of is when Congress, you know, we didn't come up with any answers, but it's about time for Christmas break. So no, you're not going fucking anywhere until you figure this out.
Federal company. It was a Dutch company.
Good the project was commissioned by Rich Waterstaat, the federal agency responsible for maintaining Dutch infrastructure as part of an ongoing project to widen the major highway in the country.
So they just have their shit together. You but know. It had to be outside contractors that were doing
like the government
most
paid
of it,
for it.
I would assume. Anyway, then there is the next tweeted favorite or liked tweet. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Newsom has just signed a bill decriminalizing jaywalking.
Oh, he finally heard your pleas.
Yes. Where was he after I got all those fucking jaywalking tickets? And what's the city of Burbank going to do for revenue
That's
now?
That's true.
Yeah, so the new law will make it legal for pedestrians to cross the street anywhere, including outside of designated crosswalks, so long as it's safe to do so. Proponents of the law say that enforcing jaywalking laws waste police resources and discourage people from walking. And then it was written by Assemblymember Phil Ting. According to a release written by Ting, jaywalking disproportionately affects, quote, people of color and lower income individuals who cannot afford tickets that can often total hundreds of dollars.
That's what it took.
They can also knock it the fuck off if they'd like. Well, you know, you don't have to jaywalk. And also, I've been in this city for a long time. It was always described to me as a safety issue. Mm-hmm. We do jaywalking tickets because it is dangerous to jaywalk. We don't want to take your money, but we need to pass along this important safety message to you through your checking account. But evidently, it's not about safety anymore. It's about equality.
Yeah.
So I have a quote from Ting. Quote, It should not be a criminal offense to safely cross the street. When expensive tickets and unnecessary confrontations with police impact only certain communities, it's time to reconsider how we use our law enforcement resources and whether our jaywalking laws really do protect pedestrians.
So it impacts only certain communities. So just black and brown communities. Or is it the community of people who jaywalk versus the community of people who don't jaywalk. This is, these people are fucking nuts. And by the way, whatever communities you're trying to help by adjusting the mass scores or getting rid of the jaywalking tickets, they shall fall further behind. That's
yeah, how, by
this,
far.
This is a nice story. Version of what Canada complained about. Because I'm probably all about this.
I'm all about the part where you go, hey, if it's safe, it's safe. I don't
tell your mouth.
I don't want it under the guise of equity. I don't like this impacts communities thing. It's fucking racist shit, and it's soft bigotry of low expectations. And on that note, I will play you. Let's see. So when the storm hit, Ron DeSantis made this comment like, hey, looters, don't try it because we're Second Amendment here and shit could happen if you try to loot.
We're not going
to
jump in.
Well, we may not be there, but the guy who owns the house may be there and he may be packing. So this is him telling people not to loot. And also, a lot of people don't want to leave their house because they think it's going to be looted.
Yes.
Would you leave your house in L.A.?
Fuck no. Hardly leave it now.
It's going to be looted. You know what I mean? So I like the governor saying, we got your back. Sorry.
The other thing that we're concerned about, particularly in those areas that were really hard hit, is, you know, we want to make sure we're maintaining law and order. Don't even think about looting. Don't even think about taking advantage of people in this vulnerable situation. And so local law enforcement is involved in monitoring that. You know, I told Kevin if the state needs to help as well, because, you know, you can have people, you know, bringing boats into some of these islands and trying to ransack people's homes. I can tell you in the state of Florida, you never know what may be lurking behind somebody's home. And I would not want to chance that if I were you, given that we're a Second Amendment state.
All right. So Joy Reid is very upset about that statement because here it is. Yeah, she sent out a tweet.
She tweeted, she tweeted this with response with a quote, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. And as she quoted segregationalist Miami Sheriff Walter E. Headley from 1967, and then she wrote, didn't take DeSantis long to return to form, and then an NPR article about the quote.
Huh. All right. You think looters are black or brown, I guess, then that...
In the Everglades?
Well, it's kind of racist, like saying that jaywalkers are black. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Thanks, Joy.
Also, you know, DeSantis and I are.
Oh wait, she has a better quote than that. Oh. You can find it. There's another one you can look up. Sorry,
we're not simpatico on everything. But did you know that starting 4 days ago, there is a gas tax holiday in Florida, so it can be done, Governor. So that's, I think, 25 cents a gallon that they're not paying because there's a gas tax holiday. So just like Disney World staying open during COVID, you want to send a couple people over and see how they did it, or what do we do here?
We have, and I'll screw the math up a little, but the first $1.10 of our $7 gas out here, maybe $1.12, is taxes and regulations.
That's, I thought it was 68 cents.
And then there's another 60-something cents worth of environmental whatever blend, meaning we in California say to the petroleum people, we need our own California blend. And they go, okay, we can do that, but it's going to cost you.
New Zealand Peaberry.
And that's what we get. Okay. So
Cascade hops.
Exactly.
There's a couple of bucks off our seven just right off the top. But then I think we're even going to raise gas taxes again. Chris can find that.
I'm not seeing any other.
There was another Joy Reid. I don't know if it was a vid or a tweet, or you can put Ben on it, tell him to look around. Anyway, a correction, but go ahead, Gina.
We were talking yesterday off mic about the severe beating that a Studio City resident was inflicted upon him here in Los Angeles in a pretty nice, normal neighborhood overall.
South of the Boulevard.
Yeah. Well, I read where it was.
By Harvard Westlake?
No. By Terry's. I don't know if you're familiar. It's one of my favorite Mexican spots. It's basically Ventura and Tujunga, so it's kind of around the
corner.
And it said, how dare you? It said, the last quote, the guy, it's like his lung collapsed, his vertebrae are all fucked up, his ribs are cracked. And it wasn't, and I think the wife was the one who was quoted, I think, saying, these weren't transients. These people, quote unquote, live here. They just park here and live here.
Yeah, I think it was a hill house, and they were like parking down the hill.
Right. They just, that's it didn't where they
take,
chill.
It didn't take that long for me. You know, I used to go, why is everyone, look, if you're homeless, why are you living in Skid Row? Live in fucking Studio City. Yeah. I mean, go to where the real estate is $2 million a home and live there. Yeah. As long as you're living on the ground, might as well do it in a nice part
nice
of town.
Ground, yeah.
Right. And they figured it out. Also, a correction when, we were talking to Bill O'Reilly about Muhammad Ali, and he said Customato was his trainer. Yeah. Angelo Dundee was his trainer, famously. Somebody corrected us, and we stopped and asked him about it, but Cus could have also trained him, or it just was that a complete
Bill doubled
O'Reilly brain fart?
He doubled or tripled him. Down. Yeah, he was like,
well,
oh,
we
yeah.
said Customato, and he said, yeah, back in the day. Timeline, it would have made sense. And Cus is a pretty renowned trainer, but Angelo Dundee was definitely Ali's number one guy. I don't know if Cus was, maybe Cus showed up at the camp. Yeah. You know, there's multiple guys, and he would have been the right age to do it. All right, let's see. We got Jake Paul zooming in any moment now. Chris, there may be some more Joy Reid out there
I
for
can't
some
find
reason.
It. Yeah, that tweet is the only thing that everybody is reporting on. I'm not seeing any other comment from her.
All right. Let me tell you about Simply Safe, thinking about protecting your home but waiting for the right time. How about right now, the Adam Carolla shows? That's me, even if I can't pronounce my own name. Listeners are going to get 40% off. Best home security of 2022, so says U.S. News and World Report. I use and trust Simply Safe. Batteries last 10 years. You don't have to pull wires. You don't have to crawl around. You custom make the system for your home. 24/7 professional monitoring costs under $1 a day, less than half the cost of ADT's professional installed plans. Don't miss a chance to save big and protect your home. Get 40% off your order at simplysafe.com/Adam today. Customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes. That's simplysafe.com/Adam. There's no safe like Simply Safe. All right, let's see. Jake Paul is going to be boxing Anderson Silva, who's in the Hall of Fame of the UFC, pretty much one of the earlier unbeatable UFC fighters, and he's getting into the ring with him, and we'll talk to him about that right after this. You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, you're the car guy. Windshield wiper fluid. Why the 1 gallon container at the store, mini mart, and the reservoir in the car is 0.80 of a gallon? What do you do with that last 0.20, buddy?
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, that's for you to do a nice rinse if you've been blowing a butt out in the garage
that's
before
right.
you head in with the old lady who's told you she had to quit so many times. All right, we'll talk to Jake Paul in a second. Jake, pretty damn impressive. Forbes announced he made approximately $38 million in boxing.
Jesus.
Incredible.
In 2021. He's been... So, you know, he started fighting YouTubers and then kind of worked his way up to UFC guys, and then moved up to try to fight Tyson Fury's brother, who's, what's his name, expat? Doesn't matter. Tommy Fury, half brother. Tyson Fury's pretty much unbeatable heavyweight champ right now. His brother couldn't make it out of the country on more than one occasion. I don't know if he was ducking Jake, or if there was a situation, there was some situation where somebody in the organization got caught up with the mob and there was an investigation and there was a, you're not going anywhere.
A little dusting of Colonel Tom Parker.
Yeah. So, now he's going on with Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva, he, by the way, holds the record for the longest title reign in UFC history, which is about 2,500 days,
Is
a long time to be a middleweight champion in the UFC because there's so many different ways to lose, and the title just switches hands every 7 months. He had it for 8 years. I mean,
that's a long ass time.
I mean, it's a long ass time to have a belt. So he's no joke. And Anderson Silva boxes. So the rub is sort of fight the UFC guy because he spent some time on his hands, but he's also spent some time grappling and jiu-jitsu and kicking and wrestling and doing all the other disciplines. Right. You must spread the day when you're training. You got to spread it out. You cannot focus simply on the hands. But Anderson Silva also boxes professionally. And he had a fight about a year ago. I don't know if he's had a fight since, but I think he won pretty handily. So Anderson is 47 years of age, which is part of the rub too. But he's in pretty damn good shape, and he stays active boxing. So,
well, that's the thing. If you're a 47-year-old champion, you're still a champion. It's not like you're decrepit.
Well, he's given up the UFC belt, but he's a former champion, but he still stays active boxing. I don't know, Chris, what the odds makers are saying about this fight. I was reading, get ready with your drop, Tito Ortiz. I was looking into it last night, and Tito sort of did the don't mess with Anderson. He's not the he fought Ben Askren. Jake Paul did. Ben Askren is a UFC guy with a very strong wrestling background, so he couldn't use his wrestling. Right. He had to use his hands, and I think Jake made pretty short work of Ben, but this is not Ben. This is a guy who uses his hands, so it should definitely. Silva's favorite. Close, -130, which is pretty much a push, right, Brian?
Yeah, -110 either side would be about even.
Yeah, so it's a tight push, and things may change as we get closer to the fight. They're at a catch weight of 187, which means, one guy walks around at 210 pounds, and the other guy walks around at 75 pounds. They'll do a catch weight.
In the middle.
Yeah, they'll go, here's what we're going to agree to. So they agree to that. But Jake knocked out Tyrone Woodley, who is a big-time UFC guy and a serious striker as well. So he's got his bona fide. So
I wish I had his confidence and discipline. Because he, you know, like you said, he was a YouTube guy and whatever. And he's like, I can do this. I know what my goal is. I'm going to get there. The only difference is the goal is possibly getting fucking killed in a ring.
Yeah. And he puts the work in. Yeah. Oh, we have Jake meeting Sonny from 2017.
Oh, wasn't Olga with them?
At the Putt-Putt Golf Place, I think.
Excuse me?
5 years.
Are you Jake Paul?
Why are you asking?
We just saw you on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm Jake Paul. Is that your mom?
Oh, no, that's her nanny.
That's your nanny?
Yeah.
Oh, I never had a nanny growing up.
Oh, she's beautiful. Hi.
Why is everyone trying to date everyone? Ray's hitting on Kaylee over here.
Justin's dating a girl.
Sonny walking up to Jake Paul. All right.
That looked like a nice place. That wasn't the castle on Sepulveda in Sherman Oaks.
I think that is the
really?
Castle.
That place looks nice.
Yeah, it's the castle, Emmy says. Yeah, I'm only saying it through process of elimination because there's just not that many putt-putt golf places in the area. Yeah, that's where Jimmy and I used to go to hit the batting cage after K-Rock.
We did that recently.
Play the video game Violence Fight.
That's right.
And if you're looking for a violence fight, October 29th. Is when this fight's going down in the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona. So Tommy Fury pulled out of the fight due to a bacterial chest infection and broken rib.
Ew.
But he also pulled out before that, too, when he couldn't leave the country, I think. So there were two times he stiffed Jake, and then I guess Jake just wants to fight. But Anderson Silva, you know, there's a couple things. A, he knows how to use his hands very well. B, he is unfazed.
I imagine he's seen a lot.
He has walked into that octagon
days of championship
so many times. And his whole thing is we kind of talk about that with Muhammad Ali. It's the relaxation gene. Half of it is not doing the adrenaline dump that happens when you walk into that arena and they walk into that ring or that cage. He is the loose. He's a very loose guy. As a matter of fact, God will think of the fight. It was a crazy, he had this crazy fight. Chael Sonnen.
Okay. Familiar.
Chael's called into the show a few times. Anderson Silva's greatest fight was with Chael Sonnen. Anderson Silva, and you can look it up, Chris. Anderson Silva, hence his 2,500 days as a champion, was unbeatable. Just considered the most dangerous guy technique in the world. Chael challenges him. And I don't know if it was in the middle of his run or toward the beginning or whatever. I think it was somewhere in there. He was established as unbeatable. Chael shows up, and Chael's, you know, big on heart, but a little short on technique in that arena. He'd beat your ass in the parking lot. But in that arena, he's all blood and guts, but Anderson's all technique. And he's knocking guys out with front ball kicks and stuff like that. And so Chael announces he's going to beat Anderson Silva. And it's a five-round fight. Proceeds to put a whooping on Anderson Silva for 4 3/4 rounds. I'm looking at Emmy because he probably knows the time. Like, he was beating and unthinkable that this Rudy-type character could beat up Lawrence Taylor. You know what I mean? But that's what happened for 4+ rounds. And then he was so ahead on the cards that the idea was, Chael, stay away from him for one round. Give him the 10-8, 10-9. Give Anderson the last round. You just run. Stay away from him, and you're gonna do the biggest upset in UFC history. Chael wanted to finish the fight.
Oh boy!
And he traded, and at some point Anderson got him in like a submission with a leg lock on his neck. And just choked him out with no time.
That's such a movie trope. Left, you know, you got a little cocky.
Left in the fight, the biggest fucking upset ever. That was in 2010. Then they went back and fought again. And this time Anderson wasn't messing around. That's what happened. How much time was left in this fight?
Right now we're watching it from 4:46. Well, let me see.
4:46
oh, the last round five, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He knocks down Anderson Silva. He jumps on top of him. There's less than 5 minutes left in the fight. Anderson's on his back. Anderson's been beaten up the entire fight. He's on his back. Chael's holding his face down. He's throwing elbows at him. He's mounted on top of him. And Chael, I think, wants the finish out of pride.
Fighters
he's taken Anderson's back. He's got him where he wants him because he's a wrestler and Anderson's kind of more of a striker. We'll let the announcers talk for a second. They decide to stop talking.
How's Anderson going to get out of this pickle?
Everything that has been said, all the interviews that have been done. And now the fight has been taken to Anderson Silva like we have never seen before.
The punch that looked like it knocked Anderson down was actually a slip.
Oh, no.
Let him just up. Shown the replay. Anderson ducked under it, lost his footing.
Chael's trying to get the side mount.
He's inside control.
Lost his footing, ended up on his back.
He's controlling Anderson on his back.
Anderson's trying to hip escape to get to a
Anderson's been beaten up for four rounds.
He's been carrying Chael Sonnen's weight for all four rounds.
At least he has to lie down.
He's pummeling Anderson Silva.
Are we 3 minutes away from having a new champion?
This is where you say 3 minutes is a long time.
Yes.
Out a guy like Anderson Silva. There's a reason why he's a champion. He's got to know he's in a desperate situation. Let's see how much he's got left.
Another
what kind of weapons
body.
He can pull out of his arsenal. But this is desperation time. This is do or die.
He's still on his back. He's still being punished. He's still being pummeled. He's been pummeled the entire fight. Chael needs to get up and leave right now.
Climb the wall.
He expected. He expected to have to go to battle. He expected to have to overcome.
But as tired as he is, he's in his spot. He is on top.
Said, I owe everything I've achieved in my life to the work ethic that my father taught me.
Oh, that's when you're going
to
lose.
We're seeing it all come to fruition here tonight in this title fight.
He's doing the big brother thing, grabs his hand. Stop hitting yourself.
He's still on top. He's still punching him. He's still.
He's going to keep doing this.
Anderson a break.
Bottom by Anderson Silva. 11 fight win streak. Could very well be coming to an end.
11 fight win streak.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Don't do it.
Got him in a leg lock. I mean, he's hooked his neck with his leg.
He's got his legs across. That's what's it. He's tapping. Wait a minute. What's going on here? Did he tap?
He tapped.
Josh Rosenthal has stepped.
Wait, is Anderson saying no? No, he didn't. Oh, he got his second win.
Oh, no. What's happening here? Anderson
I forgot there was controversy.
Did he tap or did
he tapped. He tapped. Winning the entire fucking fight.
Damn.
It got him in a leg lock.
Kind of rope-a-doped in there a little bit, you know? Lied there. It was like the wounded tiger. Then snapped.
Kind of getting his strength back.
Oh, that's Anderson Silva. All right. Jake's video is screwed up, but we might have him on the line. We'll see if we can pop him up now, or we can just talk more about UFC greats.
Talking.
I'm here, guys. I don't know.
Oh, Jake, you there?
Hey, yeah.
Hey, okay. So we've been talking all about it, Anderson Silva. This is a tough match. How did this one come about?
Well, it's just a great matchup, and I like to challenge myself more and more with each fight. And I wanted a professional boxer because everyone says, fight a real boxer. and so I tried. I tried to get Tommy Fury. I tried to get Ramen Noodle Jr., and none of them wanted to get into the ring with me. And the MMA guys seem to have more balls than some of these boxers. So went straight after Anderson Silva. And even though it's a much more difficult fight than a lot of these other guys, I'm stepping up to the plate and challenging myself to put on a show October 29th for the fans. And I believe if I fight a perfect fight that I can come out on top.
It's going to be an 8-round fight, 3-minute rounds, right?
Yeah.
And was the last one with Tyrone Woodley?
Yeah, it was 8 3-minute rounds.
And Tyrone's a pretty accomplished striker from the UFC, so at least you definitely have that under your belt. But Anderson is probably more accomplished than Tyrone, would you say?
Definitely, definitely. I think Anderson's the greatest striker in probably combat sports history, has the longest UFC title reign, the most wins in a row. Still to this day, he holds that record. So he's a much better striker than Tyron for sure.
So you've been training. Walk us through your regimen as you set up camp for training.
Man, it's strength and conditioning. You know, that's, you know, weightlifting, sprints, the sprint pyramids, lots of jogs, long distance jogs, high level sparring with multiple people, hitting the mitts nonstop, speed bag, heavy bag, lots of recovery, ice baths, red light therapy, stretching.
What kind of psychological work are you doing? Because Anderson Silva is not going to be fazed when he sees you on the 29th, just because he's been there and done that so many times. And, you know, that adrenaline dump is really the enemy when you're going out there. Being able to be calm and relaxed just helps, you know, whether you're having sex or boxing or golfing.
Or both.
Or all at the same time, right, as I'm going to have to do. It helps so much. And so many people get beat sort of on the walk up there because they're going into fight or flight and they gas out and they don't time their breathing right. How much psychological work do you do, or at all?
Yeah, a lot of manifestation, a lot of meditation, and a lot of breath work. You know, focusing on the breath is a skill, and remembering to breathe is a skill, exactly like you're saying. And so that's a big part of the game. It's an experience level thing. You know, getting used to fighting in front of that crowd, it's not easy. And that's something that Anderson's done a bunch of times. I've done it a couple times now, but I think he'll have the advantage in terms of experience.
You know, it's funny, as you're talking about managing your breathing, I found myself catching myself a couple of times when I was doing car races, where at some point in the course of the race, I got a gulp of air, like where I found myself going, and I realized, oh, I stopped breathing
right
for too long.
Waking sleep apnea.
I literally forgot to breathe. Yeah. I was focused on whatever, and my mouth at a certain point just gulped air, like I was chugging water, because I'd so focused on something else, I forgot about breathing. And I'm guessing that probably could have happened to you in your first fight. Am I right, Jake?
No, it definitely happened, for sure. The biggest skill in boxing is defense and remaining calm and just being okay to relax, and knowing that you can defend against punches and just to take deep breaths and staying calm. That's half the battle when you're first starting out. And so you're spot on. And that's one of the things I'm constantly thinking about going into this fight, is just, you know, fighting at my pace and taking those breath breaks when needed, and to not let the moment get to me. I think that arguably is going to be more important than the fight. Because if we just were thrown in there and sparring, you know, no crowd, whatever, just a sparring match, you know, that changes things a lot. And on that level, I think we have the same amount of experience, but he's been in there at the highest level of competition for years and years. And so he definitely has the edge there with remaining calm. And so that's what I'm focusing on going into this fight, for sure.
Yeah. And not only does he have the experience, but some fighters and lots of people, some people are just loose people and some people are tight people. Mm-hmm. He's a loose person, even UFC aside. He just, it seems to be relaxed. And when you're relaxed, you can get punches off. Like, you can't have a good jab and be stiff and rigid. It slows you down. Makes it's the sense. Enemy of speed is that sort of clinching, you know? So you have to be relaxed in order to get the jab off, in order to be effective. And it's hard to just yell at people when there's 30,000 people in an arena. Relax. You've got to train.
Great.
Going into it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we spar with crowd noises on loudspeakers, volume all the way up, to mimic that, to get used to it. And it's definitely not easy. And you definitely have to learn the skill, for sure. So it'll be interesting to see how I handle the moment, but I'm getting better and better at it with each fight and getting more and more comfortable under the bright lights, for sure.
Gina?
Question from somebody who I'm sure speaks for many, who's never been in this situation and probably never will be. You talk about defense and breathing and being in the moment. I'm very curious how it feels to take a punch in that situation. Has it gotten easier the more you've done it? Does it hurt the same every time? Do you hype yourself up to not feel it? What's it like?
Yeah, the more punches you take, the more you get used to it. It's a weird thing. At first, when I first started sparring a couple of years ago, the punches hurt way worse. And then at some point you just get used to it and it becomes like second nature. Now it really doesn't hurt. It takes a very, very hard punch with proper timing and placement to stun me at all. And I think that's the same with like very high level fighters. So you just get used to it. And it is kind of crazy, though. Like, you do feel like a primitive animal when you're in the ring going up against another man for everyone else's entertainment. It does feel very barbaric for sure. And there are times when I'm like bleeding out of my head. I'm like, damn, this is kind of fucking crazy.
Yeah, the thing about getting punched is it doesn't really hurt, but it'll affect you. Sometimes you can't breathe. You know, a guy will get punched in the ribs real hard, take two steps forward, and then collapse. Mm. It's not collapsing out of pain. Right. It's just bow, or you get your bell rung.
Right.
You put your foot down, and your foot can't find the canvas, and your leg starts shaking. And then what's next? I know it's a stupid question, but I mean, is it going to be these kinds of fights, or is it going to be rankings and, you know, titles and belts and under the umbrella of like the more conventional boxing as we know it? Are there any thoughts about entering that world?
Yeah, look, I want to fight pro boxers and I want to become a world champion just for fun, just to say I did it, because no one thinks I can. And people, even when I say that now, I think people think it's just like a marketing thing, or I'm like saying it just to draw more attention to myself, but I actually truly do. And I know I can, and I will become a world champion. So that's on the cards next. And there's a lot of people that have talked smack that need to get knocked out. So I have a long list of names, and I'm just checking them off one by one.
Love it.
Who's at the top of your smack talking list?
Please don't say Carolla.
I think the biggest one that everyone wants to see, because of just like the family feud and the storyline, is me versus KSI. He beat my brother, and so I'd go avenge my brother's loss. And he talks the most shit, and I talk a lot of shit back to him. So it's a huge fight. I don't think he'll ever get into the ring with me after he sees me fight on October 29th. But you know, who knows what's next, man? It's kind of crazy. Like, you know, what was it, 2-3 years ago, I was on your show and we're just talking about like the same sort of stuff. And like, you know, you never thought it would be here today.
No,
it's pretty crazy.
No, look, proving people wrong is a big deal. Society's kind of cruel, and we're short on time. So we look at this guy and we go, this YouTube jack off, have fun. But with each fight, there's more respect, obviously, because you're proving it. But I think your real strength is your work ethic. I think it's your determination. I think it's your mindset. Because at a certain point, everyone is 6'2 and 190 pounds. You know what I mean? It really just becomes about the time, the effort, and the commitment, which cannot really be taught. It's kind of an internal thing, and you just have it. Intestinal fortitude or something, but this drive that you have. And I would never bet against someone with a drive, whether they were boxing or whether they wanted to be a stand-up comedian. If that drive, you know, Jimmy Kimmel has an incredible drive. Right. You know, never bet against the drives. And I think that might be your greatest asset. Thoughts?
I agree. Like, highly agree. I always say my work ethic's number one. And my will to win. You know, a lot of times in the ring, shit gets tough. And it's easy to find ways out and to quit. But if you just have something in the deepest part of your body, in the deepest part of your bones, where you're just never going to give up no matter what, that's what it takes. Because you're so right. How many punches can you throw? We're all 6'2". How much faster are you really than me? You know, like, oh, you know how to throw the punch like a little bit better. Like, no, like at some point it's everyone's on the same level and it's just like who has that motor and that will to win. So I totally agree with you. And that's why I know I can accomplish these things is because people just look at face value. Oh, this kid's only been boxing for 3 years. He can't beat Canelo or become a world champion. Well, it's like you said.
I wouldn't bet against you. The fight is on pay-per-view, by the way, Showtime pay-per-view. That's October 29th, and tickets are on sale now. And you can go to the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona on the 29th to watch the fight in person. I shall be watching, and I wouldn't bet against you, Jake
Paul. Just YouTube jack-off. Have fun.
Come on, man.
Thanks, Jake, and continued success, and we enjoy talking to you.
All right.
All right, let's see. Bill Shatner is on the line, so we'll go from one extreme to another. We'll do that in a second. First, I'll tell you about Concrete. Your body makes about half the creatine it needs. The other half comes from your diet, but most American diets are low in creatine-rich foods. Concrete patented creatine, HCL is the favorite creatine of elite, well-informed athletes, the number one bioavailable creatine and the only microdose in creatine. Just one small scoop per 100 pounds, so Jake would need one scoop and about 7/8 of a scoop. I'd need two scoops and make them heaping. Creatine is required for functional energy in every cell. Your brain uses about 20% of the creatine in your body, but your immune cells need it to protect you, and your heart cells need it to pump, and your lungs need it to breathe. Let's get some Concrete. Am I right, Dawson?
Take control of your health, both body and mind. Build a better you with Concrete. Register now at con-crete.com/podcast. That's con-crete.com/podcast. For a chance to win a $500 Walmart Visa gift card, available now online and in-store at Walmart. Concrete is truly life-changing and performance-enhancing.
We'll take a quick break. Be back with William Shatner right after this.
All this month, celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month with Pluto TV. Watch movies with the biggest stars like Eugenio Derbez in No Eres Tú, Soy Yo, and Luis Gerardo Méndez in Camino a Marte. Plus, Pluto TV has thousands more movies and TV shows and over 45 channels in Spanish, all for free. So download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming today. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.